WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
You're tuning in on a rainy Monday night. Thank you for keeping your radio dial set to 95.9. WATD, last program of April. Hey, April showers bring May flowers. Just kind of remember that. Although our weather has not followed the pattern that we're accustomed to over the past 6 or 7 months. But let's just hope that later on this week, as it has been promised, we'll see a warmer weather. You are listening to Monday Night Talk, where the South Shore does like to come and tune in to some of the folks that we have here. We try to have a variety of conversations. Not necessarily 100% political, no. We try to mix things up, do different things. But 'tis the season for folks who are seeking office on various levels. And we're going to start right out after traffic. He's actually here, early warming up in the bullpen. Mr. Ed O'Connell. Ed is, of course, looking for your vote for state representative, as we have a number of folks who are looking for that 4th Plymouth District seat. Mr. O'Connell is here to tell us why you should vote for him in September and then repeat that process in November. So stay tuned for that at around 6:21. And then we have State Representative and U.S. Senate candidate Jeff Deal will be joining us. Jeff, just fresh off of the GOP state convention, where he garnered, I think, 56% of the party vote. Kind of the party's pick. We'll kind of get his take on how things are going for him, how that RV is doing as it's getting around the Commonwealth, as he's looking to upend a U.S. Senator, the senior Senator Elizabeth Warren, who mysteriously actually was in Jeff Deal's backyard this weekend, Brockton, Whitman, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll speak with Jeff Deal at 6:40. 7 o'clock, we got a group of Brockton city councilors who will be popping by, led by at-large Councillor Wynn Falwell in Beauregard. I believe, I'm not positive this 100%, but we also could have Ward 4 City Councillor Susan DeCastro and the Council President, Dennis Ianneary. But what I know at this moment, though, is that Wynn and Ann will be here. Hopefully, they'll have at least a flock of other councillors with them. And we'll talk about a bunch of Brockton issues. Probably the top one is talking about the passing of one of the city's historians, Jim Benson. Good guy who has done a bunch of books, done a lot of stuff for the city when it comes to at least documenting the city's history. I was fortunate to interview him a bunch of times and even get books on the history and learn a lot of stuff about the city and other communities, because Jim also lived in West Bridgewater. I will continue the lineup in just a moment, but I have to pull over to the breakdown lane because it's time for us to slide into the traffic center, the WATD traffic center, our final check of the traffic this evening, brought to you on this end by Brennan's Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshopma.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now in Pope's Island, New Bedford. And let's play Who is Our Traffic Reporter?
It's George Brown. How are you,
George? I love you, George. How's things going?
Well, we're looking slow still coming out of the city right now. Coming out of the tunnel, it's jammed right down through Savin Hill. Then you're back in it by Granite Avenue down to the Braintree Split. Northbound is tough from passing over to Ponset Circle. Then it's heavy for Mass Ave back into the tunnel. Route 3 southbound coming off the expressway. You've got delays down past Union Street. Then it breaks free the rest of the way down along the South Shore. Northbound, we're not seeing any delays on Route 3. If you're heading to the Cape, Sagamore Bridge right now on Cape is pretty good. Just a slight delay getting up and over. Leaving the Cape, though, Route 6 westbound still backed up 2 miles getting to the Sagamore Bridge. Sponsoring a child with compassion is the most effective way to end extreme child poverty. Sponsor a child right now at compassion.com/radio. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm George Brown in the WATD Traffic Center.
I was born and raised in Massachusetts, and one of my favorite Masshole expressions is wicked. It's like heavy wall bangers. 10, 14, 19, male and female, 90 degree and 45 degree for $9.99. Wicked. Another favorite expression is pissa. Got oil? Brennan's has variable voltage batteries for $14.99. Pissa. Let's put the two together and make it a noun. There goes the guy passing everybody on the right in morning rush hour traffic. Oh, aren't you a wicked pissa guy? Brennan's Smoke Shop. Customers must be wicked pissa and have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Also very proud to announce that we are caught up in regards to podcasts. So if there are any podcasts, and you know what, we've had a lot of great guests over the years, eight years. I've lost count. But we've been doing this for a while. I say we because I've had many a co-host who've popped in. Joe Rossi, the most recent one who sits in with me from time to time. But we also look forward to your feedback. MondayNightTalk@gmail.com for any particular segment, whether it's about one of the individuals who are sitting here or about something that we're talking about. We welcome your comments. Just to kind of close things out as to what else we have on tap for this evening, we have the segment. It is returned. The gloves are off. Brian Cook and Steve Gill return for another engagement at 7:30. A couple of things that we'll be discussing. Route 3 and, you know, what needs to be done in order to, you know that little, it ran on Derby Street where everybody doesn't know how to merge. You know, what needs to be done to widen that? And what are our elected officials doing to make something like that happen, or at least keep us up to speed as to what's going on with a lot of the infrastructure and construction projects and other conversations? So stay tuned for that at 7:30. But now we shift our attention to the gentleman who arrived here bright and early, right around 6 o'clock. Couldn't wait to kind of get in here and chat. And I might also add, kind enough to, I actually asked him to actually come in later, and he was quick to change his schedule to come in. We have Mr. Ed O'Connell. He is a Republican who is running for state representative. Welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me, and hello to all your listeners in Marshfield, Scituate, and the entire South Shore.
For those who may or may not know you, kind of give us a little bit of a background on yourself.
Sure. Well, I'm a 25-year resident of Marshfield. I've have 25 years at the State Treasurer's Office in the State Lottery Commission. I've held positions in accounting, finance, and sales. Prior to that, I worked in the high-tech industry at GE and Raytheon Company. Civically, I've been involved with youth soccer and the school boards, volunteering. And for 10 years, I've been a reserve deputy sheriff as well in Marshfield for Plymouth County.
Excellent.
So that's my professional background. When Representative Cantwell announced suddenly that he was not seeking re-election, that's when I decided, hey, this is an opportunity for me to serve and to fill that leadership void. So that's why I'm running.
What are some of the intangibles that you feel that you bring to a position like this, a state office like this? What are the things you've already kind of mentioned? Basically, you're a numbers guy.
Right. I'm a numbers guy.
That could be important when it comes to, you know, budgets and what you can bring home for the regards to bacon for your district.
Well, Kevin, I believe I have the finance background, experienced in business, in the public sector. I'll be able to work closely as a team with Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito on day one. I've supported them over the years in their election efforts. I've worked, you know, politically as Republican Town Committee Chair, you know, getting out the vote over the years. I'm familiar with what they want to accomplish in Beacon Hill, and I support their reform agenda. So as a new legislator up there, I think I'll bring a new energy, a new voice, and a new perspective, you know, to help. I think that will help deliver, you know, funds and resources to Marshfield and Scituate residents.
What do you feel the issues are going to be, without tipping a hand, because this is, again, there are a number of suitors. This isn't just like you have an incumbent and there are going to be a couple of Republicans. There's going to be a number of candidates, Joe, one of a number. What do you feel are going to be some of the things that whatever the number ends up being in the next week or two, we'll end up focusing on? What do you feel the issues are? Or maybe you're already hearing from residents and they're telling what they feel the issues are.
Well, I think, you know, as I've initially started going around talking with people, Kevin, obviously we've just come over a severe winter where we had, you know, three nor'easters in the month of March alone. All of our resources were totally, you know, used to the maximum and depleted. But I have to say that our first responders, DPW, law enforcement, fire, and the emergency operations all came out big, you know, working in Marshfield and Scituate. I believe, obviously, you know, after the destruction of the seawalls, we have to rebuild the seawalls. We have to improve the coastal infrastructure. We have to continue to fight the drug crisis, the opiate crisis. I think from that crisis, you have to secure funds, you know, to treat and prevent programs for the affected, and also try to get more funds for first responders for training. I've seen that as a deputy sheriff, the importance of training, you know, with Narcan. The officers are being asked to do a lot more than they used to, and they need specialized training. So they need funds for that, and I think that's a statewide issue. That's something I would work hard on. And also the safety and security of our children in the classroom. You know, in the news, unfortunately, there's been, you know, tragedies. So parents are worried about the safety of their kids. And I think that's one area where I work with law enforcement and school administrators to protect the kids.
You already kind of touched upon one thing I was going to ask, because your district, the two communities are coastal communities. What's your understanding of things like the National Flood Insurance Program, the flood, the FEMA flood maps, which were big stories, you know, back 3-4 years ago when, you know, the FEMA wouldn't budge and said, well, you know, this is how we see the flood maps and this is what it'll be reflective in the, you know, the insurance program for folks who need to get, you know, insurance in case there are floods or there's any damage, or people who are not even in a flood zone, but yet were said to had to get the insurance because of how the maps were drawn up and designed initially.
Right. Well, Kevin, that's an issue near and dear to my heart. I know that our former Senator Bob Hedlund worked hard on this issue. He actually spearheaded, you know, getting some resources for this, for those affected, and Representative Cantwell as well. But I was one of those homeowners that all of a sudden found a letter in the mail that said my home insurance went up because I was in a new flood zone map.
Exactly, right.
I find myself at least 2 or 3 miles away from the coast. So it was a total surprise to me. I actually appealed it, hired out of my own pocket a surveyor, and appealed it and won the appeal initially, only to find 6 months later, 9 months later, that I was back in the zone. So I think this is an ongoing issue, and as your state representative, I will continue to fight that and look to speak with professionals and experts like Mr. Rossi on how we can go about, you know, improving the situation for the property owners along the coast and reducing the home insurance, the skyrocketing home insurance rates because of this new flood map that they didn't have to pay before that now they're facing.
What do you feel you need to do as a candidate to kind of get, not only get the word out there, But let people know that, that you are going to be the next representative, especially where you had a longtime incumbent like a Jim Cantwell, who a lot of people feel did a lot of good things, and he's a Democrat. You're a Republican. What can you say to folks to say, hey, it's not necessarily about the party, but it's necessarily about what I can be able to do as an individual, what I'm, you know, I'm somebody who cares about the communities that I'm going to serve.
Right. Again, I'm not a, you know, strict party person. I believe in the person, not the party. But Jim did excellent constituent services, I believe. I'll build on that and actually improve upon his record, hopefully. And that's what it takes. You have to talk to the voters, talk to the citizens, and see what their concerns are. Bring those issues to Beacon Hill. And that's what I'll do. I think the people of Marshfield and Scituate, they're looking for change. They're looking for new leadership, a different voice. There's a majority of one party that are influenced very heavily by a powerful Speaker of the House. As a new Republican legislator, I think I'll have a fresh voice, an independent voice, and I won't be pressured, you know, to take a vote this way or that way. I'll be working with the governor and the lieutenant governor and his team, you know, to reform things in the state that are, you know, be it corruption or waste in government, in his reform package, stronger laws for law enforcement. And I think I can do that on day one. And when I'm talking to those homeowners and, you know, my age group and seniors and veterans, I'm one of them. So I think I understand their needs, and I'll let them know that I'll be their voice on Beacon Hill.
You had mentioned that you're somebody who is civically, you've done stuff as far as with the youth groups and also serving as far as doing work with school committees. Is that correct?
Did I hear you say that? Yes, Governor Winslow School, Furnace Brook Middle School. I did the volunteer elected boards. The you know, I was on the Ventress President Board of the Ventress Library. I was a coach for soccer, so I see what everyone was doing this past weekend when we had town election. A lot of soccer games going on. But I enjoyed that. I put two girls through the public schools, so I think we're blessed with excellent schools in Marshfield, and I'll continue that tradition as well. Try to get more funding for the schools and make sure they get the quality education they deserve, and the teachers, the pay with their collective bargaining, that, you know, they have a competitive pay rate to keep them in the school system.
That is kind of a struggle. I see that, hear that more and more with communities where, you know, we know that when it comes to municipal budget, that the schools, education usually gets the lion's share of that funding, but sometimes it's not necessarily enough. What do you feel needs to be done in order to make sure that we're doing the best we can when it comes to public education, even though we have a governor who is someone who is in favor of charter schools? He has been supportive. I know that there was a ballot question recently in the past couple of years that he kind of backed, so to speak. Wasn't successful, but he backed it.
Right.
Give me your thoughts.
Well, I think that we just have to continue and seek that excellence in education. And I believe his, you know, his heart is in the right direction. He just wants the best possible education for the kids. But where we're at right now is public school, and that's what we have in Marshfield. So I'm just all for the teachers, making sure they're well-funded and the kids have the supplies and the equipment that they need in the books to be able to learn as much as they can from a school day.
Talk to me about the South Shore. It's something that, while the folks who are serving in office as representatives or state senators may have a D or an R next to their name, a lot of them kind of work together on a lot of stuff. You feel like you're that type of a person who's able to work with someone regardless of their party affiliation, or even if they are in a party, depending on, you know, what they're doing up there, in order to be able to put together legislation?
Absolutely. I mean, regardless of party affiliation, I'd be able to work with my fellow legislators and up on the Hill to make sure we get the best possible outcome, you know, for Marshfield and Scituate. I think I've had a history of, you know, regardless, I work with the person, not with the, you know, party brand, the ID. I think Governor Baker is a perfect example of that. He's, you know, worked across the aisle and gotten a lot of things done, accomplished. And so I would seek out, you know, the representative from Scituate right now and work with her, Joan Moschino.
Yeah.
Moschino. And, you know, if there are ongoing issues where I think they'll benefit both towns, I'll absolutely join in. If there, you know, sometimes we have differences, hopefully we'll just work them out. And but if there's a common agenda that are beneficial to both, absolutely.
What's it been like getting your campaign up and running and mobilized? What's that process like for you?
Well, it's, you know, right now it's at the early phases because of the sudden announcement, unexpected. Mm. However, we're gaining momentum. We're in the, we just finished up the signature phase. So right now we're working on social media, which is a challenging in this day and age. It's you have to have it. It's an important thing. But I feel the number one way to get around and getting your message out is by meeting the people. And I intend to do that just by going to events, knocking on doors, meeting the folks at the, you know, the schoolyard, on the playground, everywhere in town.
You talk about social media. How feel? I know you and I had talked, and you know, many moon ago, you were running for, I don't know if it was a county treasurer,
Plymouth County Treasurer. I did win Marshfield and came close in Scituate, so that was a good race against the current treasurer, Tom O'Brien. However, I did win Plymouth County Commissioner race. I served on a board for 2 years on that, just to evaluate Plymouth County government and the viability of it.
Well, how do you feel social media has differed since when you were on the county, you're running for a county seat, as to what it's like now?
Well, back then it seemed to be just email, and now it's the Twitter, it's the Instagram, it's the Facebook, which is critical to success. I agree. It's a younger generation. However, you can't beat just shaking hands, meeting people one-on-one, and discussing the issues, because a lot of things get misconstrued on the internet, I believe, with Twitter. There's a lot of petty bickering, and I don't like that. I don't like, disparaging anyone, you know, electronically, and it's hard to take back once you put it out there.
So, unfortunately, it seems as though with this new form of communicating, you have more keyboard warriors, so to speak.
Right.
It's so easy to be able to, you and I sit here, and if I say something to you, depending on where you are and depending on your age, there was a time you said the wrong thing to somebody. It might give you a little poke in the nose, but then, you know, at least you'd be friendly afterwards. These days, it's kind of an adolescent thing to be poking each other, you know, to be physical, but where people are on a computer and are not in front of you, well, they can get away with it. Were you going to say something? My producer, Ben, wants to chime in.
Hi, Ben.
Hey, everybody. I was going to say, Kevin, the term you're looking for is the troll, the internet troll.
Oh, yeah.
That is the absolute bane of all good people.
Oh, sure. But I call them keyboard warriors because that's where they're bravest, is behind the keyboard. But if you were to see them, more times than not, I will tell you that I have a number of people that I'm somehow connected, whether it's on Twitter, Instagram. I'm on multiple platforms where I see them out and about. It might have been something that they may have said to me as a comment. Not super negative, but they've said something. I'll see them out in public, and they won't even... It's like we're friends on the internet, but we're not really friends in person. It's interesting.
It's a separation of realities for some people.
It absolutely is.
And some people don't have that line. A lot of the younger people, I think that line is very skewed for them. So it's interesting to see everybody's take on it, for sure.
Couldn't agree with you more. So let me ask you a regular Joe question. What does Ed like to do when Ed isn't working hard, figuring numbers, or running for state representative? What do you like to do as a regular guy?
Well, ideally, watch the Bruins tonight. I'd like to ski in the wintertime. We just played. I like to play hockey.
Not the South Coast Hockey League.
Of course.
You're not one of those guys. What team are you on?
I'm on the Relics, who just won the championship.
Now,
Relics is a positive name for our age group.
Okay.
I respect the heck out of that.
You know? But we're great bunch of guys who from all around the South Shore, a lot of Marshfield, Scituate players, and we play every Sunday down in Harbor Rock Arena.
The game of the week.
It's a great workout.
Mark Ducharme, and I forget who the other guy is. I know because
the sheriff plays.
The sheriff, the district attorney. Right. I tell you, I can't believe how athletic the district attorney is. Because a couple of years ago, I've been recruited a couple of years ago to play during Pembroke Day, where the Chamber of Commerce plays against the Pembroke Fire and Police. And I think there was one year, a couple of years ago, that the DA played the hot corner.
Right.
He actually did. I'm like, wow.
Well, his team just won the championship as well in the Classics League, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. So,
wow. Who knew?
Going to have to bring it up when you
Very impressive.
So before you walk out of here, two questions. So are the Bruins going to be able to get by Tampa Bay?
Absolutely.
And do they play Washington or the Pens?
Penguins.
I hope they play the Penguins because they, for some reason, they can't beat Washington. Washington has their number.
I'm not a big fan of the Caps or the Penguins for that matter, but I am rooting for the Caps on this one. I just want to see them get out of the second round by any means necessary.
Wait, you're a Caps fan?
Not at all. I did stay one night in Maryland for a trade show, and we did watch the Caps game as locals that night, so kind of.
I actually, last year, with a good friend Steve Burns, former WATD anchor who now works at WMAL, not only did we do an O's game, an Orioles game, but the following night we actually did preseason hockey. It was pretty good. I forget who the Pens were playing. They might have been playing Carolina, so it was a good time. Last question I'll ask you, and I want to thank you for, was there something you wanted to say?
No, I just want to say thank you for having me, and just want to mention if the listeners could follow me on Facebook.
Yeah, give them all the, because that was my last question is,
Facebook.
How can they find out more about you?
Okay, you can find out more about the Ed O'Connell for State Representative campaign in the 4th Plymouth District, which encompasses all of Marshfield and precincts 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6 of Scituate. My Facebook page is Ed O'Connell for Rep. Thank you very much.
You got it.
Thank you, Kevin.
Two N's and two L's in O'Connell, so keep that in mind.
No apostrophe.
No apostrophe as well. So, Ed, thank you so much. We'll look forward to hearing from more.
Thank you, Kevin.
Don't go anywhere. I'm going to take a picture of you while we're taking a quick break. Warming up in the bullpen at this moment, U.S. Senate candidate Jeff Deal. He'll be joining us in just a couple of moments. But you are listening to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Bill's Service Center on Route 139 has been a fixture in Marshfield for two decades. Bill and his crew service all makes and models of vehicles.
We do most everything. Complete engine diagnosis, computerized engine controls, brakes, tune-ups, exhaust, tires, and we do scheduled maintenance per the owner's manual.
Bill's Service Center is a family-run garage where Bill and his crew get to know you and your vehicle.
Small jobs, we can usually get you in and out in one day. Appointments are necessary only for major jobs. Senior citizens, we offer a 10% discount.
Get your oil changed at Bill's Service Center, starting at just $29.95. Get lube, oil, and filters. Get a free brake inspection and a tire rotation for just $10 more.
We're open daily from 8 o'clock until 5 o'clock. Saturday, 8 o'clock until 1 o'clock. Route 139, 2054 Ocean Street in Marshfield. Bill's Service and Repair.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Yeah, just a gentle reminder, best way to be able to contact the program is MondayNightTalk at gmail.com. We are on Facebook. There is a page, Monday Night Talk. I think it's at 959WATD or something like that. But feel free. Like the page. Post comments. You can find the shows, recent shows up. So, joining us, a gentleman who, I'll check the numbers in just a moment. He'll, of course, correct me. Who was able to gain 56% of the parties of the delegation, the GOP delegation, at the state convention this past weekend as he gets ready to tackle U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren. We have State Representative and U.S. Senate candidate Jeff Diehl joining us. How are we doing, Jeff?
Kevin, it's going great. I mean, you just mentioned had an incredible weekend. We got 56% of the vote, like you said. My nearest competitor, I beat by 30%, and the person after that was 10%. So it was a three-way race, and I was able to, you know, more than double my nearest opponent. So it was really a testament to the hard work of a great volunteer team, a lot of supporters out there across the state who I've been talking to for months. I'm in my RV now. I've actually been driving around the state in my Deal on Wheels RV, talking to people who are voters, delegates to the convention, and we're able to, you know, get pretty overwhelming support to make me the nominee. I'm the officially endorsed candidate of the Massachusetts Republican Party to go up against Elizabeth Warren in November.
So what comes with that? Is it just merely a title, or is there much more to it?
Well, look, it shows that, you know, the Mass GOP Party can work with me on the work I'm going to do to continue the campaign against Warren. I think that's a pretty strong statement. Obviously, the governor himself was given the party endorsement, and that gives him, you know, certain resources to move forward. But the fact of the matter is, it's still a primary, and obviously we got some work to do. I'm not going to take that for granted, but we are focused mainly at this point on defeating Elizabeth Warren, the senator who, as I said in my speech at the convention, has put Massachusetts in the rearview mirror the day she was elected or inaugurated, because really she seems to be more focused at this point on running for the White House. And in the last 6 years, really has done nothing for the state of Massachusetts. There's no financial, benefits we've gotten from her down in D.C. In fact, she voted against the 21st Century Cures Act, which gave Massachusetts $12 million in funding to fight the opioid crisis. So I think it's time for a senator who has a track record of delivering for his constituents. As you know, I've been serving the people of Abington, Whitman, and East Bridgewater. I've saved taxpayers across Massachusetts over $2 billion when I led the repeal of the index gas tax in 2014. And, I also worked to block the Olympics from having taxpayers have to fund the overruns if that had come to Massachusetts, the average overruns being $10 billion for the last five Olympics. So I really have a history of working, regardless of party, on what's good for the people of my district, what's good for Massachusetts. And now I get a chance, thanks to the convention, to be the leading candidate to go to Washington and start working for the people of Massachusetts. And by the way, the tour I'm on in my RV is called the First and Forward Tour, putting Massachusetts first and going forward. Because, again, it's time for someone who actually has been, you know, helping the people of Massachusetts every day since I've been in office for the last 8 years. And I want to continue to do that for 6 years as a senator down in Washington.
How was the, you know, you've been to many a convention. How was it different this time for you going there and then being able to garner such support for this, at least this level of politics?
Well, you know, there's a certain mechanics to conventions where obviously, delegates, you want to make sure that you're recruiting delegates to come to the convention that are supporting you. But you also want to win over a lot of delegates there. So I put a lot of time and effort into the speech that I delivered. It was really wonderful. What was even greater, though, was I was able to be nominated by Maureen Maloney, who lost her son, Matthew Denise, to somebody who was here illegally with a criminal background who should have been deported. She took a lot of courage to get up there and nominate me. And then my wife, Kathy Jo, was able to speak about me in her seconding of the nomination. So just a very special moment for me to have, you know, some people, you know, important people in my life, people that I consider, you know, allies in what I want to do in the Senate, speak on my behalf. And that was really nice. So I think that set the tone for, you know, how people received me when I was able to speak to the audience and, achieve a pretty good result.
So what happens? This isn't a sprint for you for the next couple of months. What's the plan as far as how you're going to canvass the Commonwealth to kind of get out there, get the word out there about your campaign? Again, you've talked about the RV and the campaign, the slogan for that. What are you going to do to pace yourself so you'll be fresh come September and November?
Well, look, Kevin, I've been doing this for 12 months, so pacing myself is not the option. This is it's a tough race. Look, I mean, Elizabeth Warren certainly has a lot of money in her bank account. She's got a lot of, special interest groups supporting her in this race. And, of course, we always know that, the mainstream media seems to have her back versus Republicans. So it's going to be an uphill battle. But you know what? Now, she can have all that because I've got something better. I've got the people of Massachusetts that have worked with me on the gas tax ballot question. I was the co-chair for the Trump campaign in 2016. We were able to get 20,000 Democrats to unenroll and vote for the president in that election cycle. And I think the same thing's going to happen here. I'm speaking to a lot of people across the state, doesn't matter what party affiliation, and I'm letting them know what I've done, how I have a track record of delivering to them and saving them money, actually putting money back in their pockets versus Elizabeth Warren. And I think they're happy to see that they actually have a choice in November when it comes to who their next United States senator is going to be. Someone who I've committed to the 6 years of serving as a senator. Elizabeth Warren, I sent her a pledge to serve the full 6 years. She went on Meet the Press and talked to Chuck Todd, wouldn't answer his question four times as to whether or not she would serve the full 6 years. So it's clear she wants to run for the White House in 2020. We just can't afford that in Massachusetts. We need someone who will have a seat at the table in Congress and with the White House to deliver for what the state needs.
I guess I would ask you this, and that is, you actually had a chance to stop by one of my favorite restaurants in Stoughton. What were the people
Town
in Stoughton?
Spa.
The Town Spa. What were the people of Stoughton like, and how did they greet you?
Well, I'll tell you what, it was so nice to, we first of all, we kicked off our shoes and had a pizza and a chance to relax. We started our Massachusetts First and Forward tour yesterday, going all around the state, and today we've been to Hyannis, we've been to New Bedford, Attleboro, Waltham. Tomorrow we're heading to Western Massachusetts. But it was nice to stop in Stoughton on the way back home that last night and just talk to folks that were sitting around watching some sports and some families there grabbing some pizzas. And I just had a chance to kind of let them know who I was, what I'm about, let them ask me questions. That is what campaigning is all about. It's because it's what is going to allow them to realize they can trust me when I go to Washington to serve them. And I think that's what worked back in my three towns of Abington, Whitman, East Bridgewater. People saw me out and about all the time, outdoor at concerts, in restaurants, at Stop and Shop, at different games, basketball games, whatever it was. I love being around towns, talking to people and letting them know what I've been doing and having them tell me what's important to them. If your legislator isn't listening to you and they're just lecturing you like Elizabeth Warren, that's not going to get the job done. It's all about your interaction with people and the trust you can build so that you can do your job effectively down in Washington.
I don't know if any of your moles or spies might have had a chance to say anything, but while you were at the convention and getting party support, it so happens that the incumbent was in your backyard. Did you get any reports as to the visits from the incumbent?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. I did get a report during the convention, during the voting, actually. I can't remember if it was before or after I found out I won the convention, but I did hear that Senator Warren was in Whitman, and I thought pretty interesting that she chose to be in Whitman, a town she's never been in before, the day that I was receiving the endorsement of the Massachusetts Party for the U.S. Senate race. But you know what? Look, she's going to do what she's going to do. My job is to get out there and reach out to as many people across the Commonwealth, because that's how we're going to win this thing, going to every city, every town, every neighborhood, and talking to every voter I can, so that they can get to know what I'm about and how I'm going to work for them.
Where do you stand in regards to volunteers and as far as fundraising? Is that something that you're still trying to garner support and get people to get involved to help further energize the campaign?
Well, we actually have led the field in my campaign with my fellow candidates as far as money raised for the election. I've raised over $1.4 million since running. I know one of my opponents put $3 million of his own money into the race. That's all well and good. He's got one other voter, his wife, who approved of that. But I have 14,000 unique donors to my campaign, the most of them from Massachusetts, that, small donations, see me as someone who's going to work for them. And so fundraising, to me, we really only scratched the surface. And I think that now that we're heading into the real, after the convention's over, really going into the field as far as the campaign kind of opening up and, and going against Elizabeth Warren, we're only going to get more and more support financially to take her on. I think this is going to be a lot like Scott Brown. People, you know, when they found out he was running for office, you know, it was only a four-month election cycle, but he was able to raise significant amounts of money and win that race against Martha Coakley back in 2010.
Well, we know what a lot of the issues are here on the South Shore. Are they similar issues as you're going out to western and central Massachusetts and up to the North Shore? How are the issues differing? What are people saying to you as they're greeting you in the RV?
Well, I mean, if you go up to Gloucester, you go to New Bedford, obviously fishing is a big thing. You know, they're tired of having NOAA sort of over-regulating the industry. I think they know they've been fishing these, families have been fishing these grounds for a couple hundred years. You know, and so I think they didn't like the fact that there was a monument status placed on 5,000 square miles by the Obama administration. They want to see that overturned. Elizabeth Warren is not committed not to overturn it. So they're frustrated there. I think if you go to the Cape infrastructure, you know, obviously the bridges, the roads, and the opioid crisis is a huge problem down in the Cape, specifically Hyannis. So, you know, there's a lot of different challenges there. If you go to Western Mass, you talk about infrastructure, not in the way of roadways as much as you know, internet and cable. I'm not a cable phone service. I mean, you literally have some areas out in the Western Massachusetts area that, you know, there's no service. Nobody can get internet, and you know, their phones die out. That's not good for trying to attract businesses to that area. So I want to see infrastructure improvement in communications out there as well. There's a lot of different things for different cities, obviously, that are important to Lawrence, of course. Dealing with a lot of crime related to the opioid crisis or fentanyl distribution. But there's a lot of good things happening in these cities, too. And, you know, you stop in Lowell and you see how well that city's doing. They've got a minor league baseball team. They've got a very flourishing college there, state college. I mean, there's a lot of great stories across Massachusetts. My job is to find out where we can make improvements, and I think that's the most exciting part of this campaign. Just meeting people and asking them what I can do to help them.
Is it too early? But now I asked this question, and I ask you if it's too early, but have you heard from any of the national party? Has anybody contacted your campaign and want to somehow make sure they help energy, you know, get involved and help you further?
Well, of course, anybody in the White House who I'm familiar with really is prevented from working, you know, directly colluding, or not colluding, I'd use that word, but you really can't coordinate with any campaigns like that. But look, I think there is an interest from D.C. I know Sean Spicer came up and held an event for me. It was really gracious of him to do that. And
wow.
He made it very clear that the folks there are seeing me as the person that's going to win the primary and have a real chance to defeat Elizabeth Warren in November. So, look, I think they're paying attention very clearly. And I think that we really believe that we have the team, we have the message, we have the messenger that's going to actually make this happen.
So, like, after the September primary, any chance that we could see some heavy hitters up here, maybe Pence or maybe the Donald himself, to kind of give you a little bit of a push?
Of course, you can't guarantee anything, and their job is more important than any campaign.
Sure, sure.
But if they decide that coming up here and supporting me in the race is something they want to do, I certainly would welcome it. And I'll tell you, I think they've done a fantastic job. I mean, you know, despite the resistance going on down there, and of course Elizabeth Warren seems to be very proud of resisting everything that's going on. I mean, she even, you know, is against Mike Pompeo for Secretary of State. Here's a guy who was the director of the CIA under Obama, and now she's saying he's unqualified to be Secretary of State because, you know, the President Trump nominated him. I think it's just such partisanship that doesn't help us move forward, and I think that's what we really want to get rid of, and send someone to Washington that's just going to put the usual finger pointing and yelling at each other aside and just dig in and get things done for a state. So I think it's going to be a very vigorous campaign, and by the end, it should get very exciting.
Anything I haven't asked you, at least for an update, but you want to make sure you share with the listeners here at WATD?
Well, I know the listeners, a lot of folks listening already know that you can go to my website to get some stuff, but I want to remind anybody who doesn't know, if you go to dealforsenate.com, D-I-E-H-L-F-O-R, senate.com, we will send you a free bumper sticker, a free lawn sign. You can even check a box to be a volunteer, because we certainly look forward to having as many people get involved to help with this campaign. It's very important for the future of our country, but also for the future of Massachusetts. Again, I'm someone who will have a seat at the table, not just in a Republican-controlled Congress, but also with a White House that I supported in 2016. I think that's going to be a real asset to Massachusetts.
And again, I would think that this is the race that you're in, is probably going to be one of those races that folks are going to be watching around the country.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, Scott Brown obviously made national news when he won the race. But I think at this point, we've gotten to the point where Massachusetts is willing to vote Republican. We have a Republican governor, and they're willing to vote what's in their financial best interest, like when they repealed the index gas tax that I had worked on. So, you know, I'm looking forward to spreading that message of the fact that I've delivered for them, worked and actually lower their taxes. Now, I want to make sure that the borders are secure so that we, you know, can keep that $1.8 billion in Massachusetts budget each year that goes towards supporting illegal immigrants. That money could be going to schools. It could be going to retirees. And we want to make sure that fiscally we help everybody in the state see a better future for themselves. And, look, I think that's the message that people are responding to with the Trump tax cuts that went through in Congress. People have gotten bonuses. They've gotten pay increases. We've seen power companies in Massachusetts reduce rates. That's the kind of stuff I want to build on and allow people to keep more of their own money, because the more you keep, the more freedom you have. It's just the message I've always had in office.
Well, Representative, before I let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you that my previous guest, Ed O'Connell, wanted me to say he wanted to extend a hello to you. I don't think he had a chance to get to you at the convention in Worcester, but when he was up and around, he thought it was impressive as to what happened with you getting 56% of the party's vote.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And I'll tell you, I'm glad that Ed is stepping up to run in the race. I think it's very important to make sure that we challenge for all seats, because competition from both sides of the aisle is very important. That's how you get the good ideas brought out to the people, and that's how you hear from the voters about what's important to them when you go up to Beacon Hill to serve. And I think it's great that he's running. So I look forward to his race, and I look forward to, obviously, getting around the state and talking to more voters as this goes on.
Representative, thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to more updates as we cruise through the summer months.
Well, I look forward to more Monday Night Talks with Kevin Tachi, because that is what you want to do on a Monday evening. Listen to your station and hear great information with all the guests that you bring on.
See, and this is why, and you know what, I was joking with Senator DiMacedo, because like, reason why Tom Coulter and Jim Cantwell leave is because you don't have them in the intro. I go, well, you know, people like Jeff Deal, they know how to give me something that I can use. That's a great nugget. You just earned yourself onto the update of our intro.
Well, you know what? Hopefully, if it works out, you can have a U.S. Senator Deal give you a nice little intro up as well.
That would be fantastic. Well, continued success. Make sure you thank Holly for me, and we'll be talking soon.
Thanks, Kevin. And thanks to the listeners for, you know, always being a great audience to what I've been talking about, because it's been a wonderful 8 years as a rep, and I'm looking forward to, again, continuing to serve, hopefully, in the Senate for the next six.
All right, there he is, U.S. Senate candidate, serving the GOPs, getting 56% of the party nomination this past weekend. Jeff Deal has been our guest. We are going to step aside, closing out the first hour of Monday Night Talk. Second hour is on the doorstep. Stay tuned. You're listening to Monday Night Talk right here, exclusively on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
I'm Bob Smaldone of Budget Blinds, and I hope what happened to me never happens to you. I was driving down Route 3, perfect visibility, and a wild turkey flew right in front of my windshield. Glass in my face, I was startled, and that doesn't even begin to describe the effect. I could have lost control, others could have been hurt, but there was good news. Tiny & Sons replaced my windshield, cleaned up my truck, even gave me some medical attention. Tiny's boys really do a good job.
D
download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
So, second hour of Monday Night Talk. We've got quite the crew that has flocked to the table for the second hour, just to tease the second segment of the second hour. The gloves are off. Brian Cook and Steve Gills, the new segment. It's almost like an update to the red versus blue segment I used to do with a couple of individuals who. Yeah, just so folks know, we are live on the air. Dennis, pull that right close to yourself. We have a fine selection of Brockton City Councilors who are joining us. Now, Ian, I'm surprised. Usually you gravitate towards the microphone. Ian Beauregard is playing the role of the silent partner this evening, I guess.
The
Greta Garbo of the group.
Oh.
No, you have to save the best for last. What can I tell you?
Really? Are you calling yourself the cherry on top? I don't know if that's possible. You got to earn enough stripes to do that. Of course, that's Ian Beauregard, Ward 5 City Councilor, who is off microphone in front of me, directly in front of me. If you're tuning in on your radio dial, is Ward 4 City Councilor, Susan DeCastro.
Good evening, Mr. Tachi.
And to my left, might be your right, is at-large Councillor Wynn Farwell.
Nice to be here, Kevin.
I want to welcome you all here.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here.
Did you welcome me? I didn't hear my name.
I did. I started with you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Dennis Ian Earring. Ward 3 City Council President.
I guess.
Have a drum roll, please, yes. For this gentleman.
I guess that's a sign of me getting a little older. My ears must be getting...
No. But I just happen
Good
to
evening, Mr. Tachi.
How are you, sir?
It's nice to see you, as always.
Nice to see that you are here.
Pleasure. Thank you.
It's better to be seen than viewed.
This is... Yeah, this is true. Yeah. That's it on that
Sorry, topic. I'm on the other side of 50, so reality is when, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know? In my youth, come on, we were all young. We were indestructible, so to speak.
We're still young.
Oh, yeah. I say 50 is the new 30, but hey,
Doesn't matter how the limbs work or whatever. It's the mind. It's all
that's
in
right.
the mind.
Steel trap.
Mind don't
right
matter.
There.
If you don't mind, it don't matter.
That's right. Yep, that's right.
Ian, do you have a cliche you'd like to share with us? Silent partner.
Good.
Wow.
Come on.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Well, when you're ready, scoot up to the table. Before we actually start our conversation, I was speaking with Wynn about this, and that is I want to take a moment to remember Mr. Jim Benson.
Yes.
Please do.
I see him as one of the city's historians with a couple of other different individuals, but I had many a conversation. Oh, and scooting. You got to make sure you lean into this, though.
Yes, sir.
Okay. He sadly passed not too long ago.
He did, very unexpectedly.
Very unexpectedly. No, I knew him not only as an author, a gentleman who authored a number of books, a couple about Brockton. I think there was one about West Bridgewater. He loved sharing information. He also liked correcting people about information from time to time, too, if you weren't necessarily, and that's what you need. You need somebody who's like, no, that's not what happened. This is...
And he was usually right.
Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. You want somebody who's going to, be harsh and go, hey, got it written right here, documented, passed down, generation to generation. I know what happened. But he's no longer with us. And I also knew him as, I believe, which church was it? The Lutheran?
The First Evangelical Lutheran Church on Main Street in Campello. He was their executive.
Ward 4?
Yes, Ward 4. He was their administrator for quite some time. And he also was a longtime volunteer there, and he's recently elected the president of the Campello Business Association.
No way.
Yes.
What happened to the brass man? He's no longer doing it? Ron Bethany? Is he?
No, he hasn't done it for the last couple of years. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
He succeeded Jonathan Jamulis from Cape Cod Cafe.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Sure.
And
all great people.
Yeah. Jim Benson was also truly a labor of love, the moderator for the town of West Bridgewater, right?
So I want to at least take a moment to remember anybody who wants to elect. I'm actually going to, Ben, Could you do me a quick favor? Could you give me the wireless mic for Ann Beauregard so she'll be able to speak? I mean, you could share for now, Ann, if you want.
No, I just wanted to bring up, since you're talking about Jim Benson, that the Historical Society will go on with their presentation of his new book, Moosehead Lake, and the dedication at the Historical Society this Saturday, May 5th,
yes,
at 11 a.m. Yes, 11 a.m.
Is that Arcadia Publishing? Do we know? Do we know if that's who that is?
It appears to be, yes.
I think it is.
Because that's all his publications.
Oddly enough, I actually got something from another author who uses Arcadia, and it's a similar type book as far as a historical thing, where it's kind of laying things out for. There's Norwell Halifax. I forget the name of the family. It's a particular family, and there's a bunch of communities that they're somehow a part of on the South Shore. So, no, Ben, can we give her the stand? I would prefer that she has the stand, just so we don't have any issues. And just kind of put it right here. We just kind of have everybody just scoot down just a little bit so we can squeeze Annie in.
Make room for Ann.
Make room for Ann. So where do we want to start? We have a nice segment here. What's the latest in the city of Brockton? Do you want to start with Aquaria, adult recreational marijuana? Hey, budget season's upon us. You kids are going to be buckling down and taking a look at the mayor's budget.
You should
be getting that. So, where do you want to start?
Yes, we will.
Pick up a dart and throw it.
All right, I'll start with Aquaria. One of my favorite topics.
Very good.
And interesting enough, again, knowing that you were here during we had the water series that we did.
Yeah.
Where do things stand? My understanding is just now there's conversation about. They want to reduce the amount of water that they're able to produce, but yet that's going to also mean that they reduce what the city has to pay them. Is that accurate?
Yeah, they want to amend the original water services agreement and establish a cap of 3.81 million gallons per day as opposed to an escalating amount. I think they should be at 4.7 now, and the issue is, what are you going to give us as a city? What are you going to give the residents for any agreement that we come to? And that's kind of really important. And people forget that we don't speak for ourselves at council. We're trying to represent the interests of all of the residents.
Right.
And
right.
So you want the best deal for the residents.
Council President?
And Council Fowle is correct. I think it's what we're trying to do on behalf of in the best interest of the people, naturally. And as you know, I wasn't there when Aquaria became the contract for water. I came on just shortly thereafter. It was 02, 03 when they did. I came on in 04. Councilor Brophy, City Councilor at Large Brophy, came back after a little hiatus, and both he and I all of a sudden found that, well, this is what we're going to be doing now for our water situation, you know what I mean, and naturally there was the need that we had to have something in place, so they had to have something in place, and I was never in favor of that contract. Even when I served as a member of the school committee, I always said I would never have I'd been there, I would have never voted for it, because the one thing that always got me with that contract is the city council gave up their authority for 20 years never to have a say with that contract. Here you are overseeing millions of dollars each and every year in a budget, but yet you can never even pick a part of whatever you want to do with that contract. And that's how that went. That's how that whole situation went down, to be truthful with you.
How does that work with the form of city government?
They went to the state and they received a waiver.
Okay.
That's how it went down. That's how the unit's administration wanted to see it. You know what I mean? And you know, was that really the right way to do it? No, it never was. It never was. And then over the years, whenever you want to invite a queer in to talk about what can we do, how can we do this different, well, better yet, what are you doing for the people of the city of Brockton?
Right.
How many people have you sold water to? None. We're working on maybe Hanson, just to throw that out. Okay. Are we? You know, well, no, we're not sure. I mean, there was never anything definitive. Never anything definitive with that contract. I mean, they just let it go, and you never could pick it apart, pull it apart, because it was just always what was said. And even now, it still is. And even, I think in this situation, and as Council Fowle said, I mean, you know, if we're going to do something, and he even said it in our last meeting, We need to be doing a little bit better than $455,000 each year. Yeah, times 10. Okay, that gives us some nice money back. You can say, but it's all going to go back probably into the water stream, as I would call it. You know what I mean? But somewhere. But still, why not go for at least $1 million? Let's get as close as we can. Let's do what we can to make it look like, look what we've done. Taxpayers, I know they're not going to be happy, but still, we need to do something. So, my take on it, I mean, haven't been there the longest, and I would probably support something, but I agree with what my other colleagues have said. Let's go for the gusto and let's see what we can get. So right now it's on a holding pattern, waiting for Mr. Condon even possibly to respond at our next finance meeting, which would be a week from this coming Monday. So,
Councilor Nicastro?
This is the first time in 10 years. And so we're at the halfway point with this 20-year contract. It's the first time in 10 years that they've come and sought an amendment, which is kind of interesting, to reduce the water that they have to have available to us. They would have this 3.81 million gallons per day available through the balance of the 10 years left on the contract. But there's more than that contained in this amendment. They're looking for our help and cooperation in obtaining certain environmental permits. It was very hard to obtain information on what that all meant. They're looking to have Aquaria install these new screens because they've had a problem.
Fish eggs,
that's right, and accumulating and clogging the screens that they have in their intake valves.
Yeah.
That's got to be worth something to them and to us. And I just think it's worth more than $455,000. I think it's worth more than $1 million to them. The wild card is, why can't we test it for 30 days? Why can't we test their ability to produce water, 3.81 million gallons for 30 days at no charge to us? We're paying all this money to have this water supposedly available to us, yet we never test it to see if it will ever run.
It's almost like that safety net that the high wire acts are using.
That's right.
You know, nobody's testing it on a daily basis in case someone does happen to take the wrong step, so
well,
to speak.
Well, Sue was right. I mean, think about this. You sign a contract, and it's got certain performance standards. And then you turn to the vendor and say, okay, prove you can perform
those
standards. Oh, no, you've got to pay us to do that. And I always use the analogy with Councilor Ian Erie. If I buy a car and you tell me it'll go 60 miles an hour, do I have to pay you to prove that it'll go 60 miles an hour? It's ridiculous. It never should have happened.
Do we know if this plant is capable of performing up to 3.81 million gallons per day?
I think it's very important to realize, too, that, first of all, you know, here they are approaching us with this proposal. But we don't know where we stand with the state. We don't know if the state now requires us to have two water sources. We need maybe an update from the state. From someone who has visited the plant twice, I believe that the plant itself probably needs some upgrades. There's so many unanswered questions, and to accept this, $455,000, like it's such a bargain, it's debatable. It's very,
Wait, I'm going to throw something else in, and I'm going to kind of go back a bit, and that is, was it not too long ago there was a conversation about buying Aquaria. I know it's, please don't laugh, but I mean, is that something that's now just on the back burner? Is that something that is essentially come and gone?
I think it's dead and buried.
It's dead and buried.
Yeah. It's dead and buried.
Like the power plant?
We hope so.
Yeah. Okay.
The power plant's not dead and buried. So.
No.
How so?
Well,
not the segue, I just wanted you to answer that.
That's right. Well, they still have a pending air quality permit, appeal that has not been resolved. Supposedly the decision will be coming in May. They still have, it's the longest existing permit ever issued by the Energy Facility Siting Board. That's still sitting out there.
But they haven't been a part of the ISO auctions
in several years.
A couple of years that I know of, because I've been following it to see if for the future power, to purchase or, so to speak, put it out in the market. So, and there's been, I've had conversations in regards to some of the parcels of land. I don't know if that's still part of the original plans of the Energy Facility Siting Board.
To me, if somebody told me tomorrow that they're still able to do what they wanted to do 10 years ago and go ahead and build a power plant, I'd say, you're foolish, because I thought we were tearing power plants down now.
Right.
Okay. I mean, seriously.
Yes.
I mean, look, and like you just said, on the that existing lot, I mean, come on. It'd be a whole start over.
Yeah. Well, and it's ironic, because last week I was actually speaking with Senator Vinny DiMaceto, and we were discussing what Plymouth's trying to do, and there's been a conversation as to what's going on with the radiological, what's going on with it, what they're putting out, what's going to happen with that site once it has been decommissioned next year.
Right.
Pilgrim, once it's decommissioned. So we had a conversation about that. So it is ironic. And like I said, I didn't want to kind of go off into that with the power plant, because, again, I don't know if that's really a prevalent conversation to have you here to kind of to vet that at this moment. I don't think it's a headline that we're seeing anywhere or a news story that you're hearing. But I think a query is kind of a big thing. And you're right. If somebody all of a sudden comes to you and goes, hey, I got this great deal, I'll do this. You're like going, because nobody does something for nothing.
That's right.
No.
And that's just me as an individual. It's just one of those things, because when I was a younger person, I got burnt by one of those great deals. I'm like, wow, it's a great deal, and then come to find out, I bought this car and it's like a great deal, and then I blew the motor two, three weeks later. It's like, it wasn't that great of a deal after all.
It only stands to reason, this Aquaria plant, all of the technology that's in there, all of the machinery, it's
dated.
Off. Yes, it's 10 plus years old. It's off warranty. And it's not being used all the time. And machinery that doesn't get used all the time tends to break.
Correct.
And I query whether they're doing the routine maintenance and the proper stuff that they're supposed to be doing, because they're trying really hard not to spend money there.
Again, we are speaking with four Brockton City Councilors. We have the Dean of the City Council. Is that what you are?
I am, yes. Yeah. I am the Dean, the President.
The Dean, the President, Ward 3 City Councilor, Dennis E. Neary.
I watch over my 10 other colleagues the best that I can. Yeah.
Like a flock.
Like herding cats.
I've got the former mayor with me. And
former mayor, city, former mayor, school committee member.
Yeah.
And now city councilor. And then Ward 5 city councilor in Beauregard. And Ward 4 city councilor, Susan DeCastro, here. I don't know if you want to talk rec marijuana or if you want to talk budget, because what's the probably one of the things that we're going to be hearing about about 2-3-4 weeks when does the mayor officially give you
mayor has indicated to I and just so that you know that he's indicated it to me, only because as council president I do go in and meet with him once a week, which
that's
is
still going good.
Tuesdays we meet because of his position as a mayor and I as a council president, and Council Fowler knows, as being a mayor as well, that if by any chance something was to take place or something with the mayor or whatever.
Well, you become mayor.
Exactly. So, but that's not the only reason. I mean, it's good that
you want to be communication. Communicating
right.
is good.
Right. So, in communication with him just a few weeks ago, last week was, matter of fact, he's looking to hopefully get the budget to the city council at least by May 24th, 25th, the latest. And by that means, I would probably be scheduling as council president and chair of the finance committee budget hearings to be, commence in that first full week of June, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, like we've done in the past. And as you know, we're in a different location. We're not in our usual home. So, matter of fact, our next two meetings in May, finance on the 7th and city council the following Monday, are going to be in the War Memorial Building, because the drama club uses the little theater, so we have to move from there. And then I'm going to see to whether or not we may have the budget meetings in the War Memorial Building, so that hopefully try to work it so there will be live meetings, because I think it's important enough. But in any case, going back to its number, which we don't know what the final number is, but the mayor did indicate that the city side looks to be okay, and the school side, he's looking to put some other monies there, but I think there's still gaps. There's still a
deficit.
There's still going to be a deficit there, and I know other councils have been in contact with some people with the school department as well for conversation purposes. That it's not as healthy as they'd like to see it. Hopefully, I think the mayor is supposed to bring to them tomorrow night at their school committee meeting a hard number that they have to work with, because the deadline of May 15th of notices, if there were to be layoffs,
right, yeah, the RIF notices,
has
right.
to be met. So, in any case,
those are usually fun stories to report on.
It's not, the budget's never easy.
I say that because it's one of those things where it's not necessarily a high number. You have to do it because it's a union thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's correct.
And there's been, and you remember under previous school administrators, I mean, there was one time, it was a huge number. I'm like, whoa.
Exactly.
That's like a third of the educational staff you had, including teachers and professionals, non-professionals, exactly. stuff like that. So when I say fun, I'm saying it sarcastically. I'm not saying like, oh, yay, they're laying these people off.
No, I realize.
Okay, because you're like, gasp.
No.
Anybody else want to weigh in on it, give their thoughts on the budget situation?
I did want to point out, I also serve and have for some time now on the Adult Learning Center Advisory Board, and we were supposed to have our advisory board meeting earlier this month, and they called us to postpone it because they're still waiting from the state for what their budget numbers are going to look like. So we have to remember, there's a whole lot of, how would I say, components to all of this. And for us, the Adult Learning Center, and this is a well-recognized adult learning center in this state, that, and it serves hundreds of people daily at all levels, that we're concerned. So at this point, we were expecting to have a meeting next week. The director of the Adult Learning Center is still hanging. You know, with where are we going to go with this? And then, meanwhile, you're anticipating the graduations, et cetera. So.
And I know the superintendent and her staff, they are really worried. If they receive from the mayor the same appropriation as last year, just level funding, they'll be about $3.7 million behind what they need to be. If they receive less than what was appropriated last year, that just increases that $3.7 million to a higher figure. And, you know, they've done some modeling, and some of the most draconian cuts would be closing the Ashfield School, laying off 80 staff at the high school. And so I think they're all just really sitting on the proverbial pins and needles to find out what's going to happen and how do we handle it. And, of course, the superintendent is in the position where if she sends out too many layoff notices and you don't need that many RIFs, then she'll be accused of, shall we say, scare tactics. But the other thing is you have to also lay off not only the people that are not going to be employed, but another number to cover the unemployment cost.
Right.
Because you start laying off that many people, unemployment becomes very costly.
And again, RIF is reduction in force notices. For the boys and girls and ladies and gentlemen who are listening at home, I make sure I'm fully giving them the information. Susan, did you want to weigh in? Or
I spoke to the superintendent today, and I really admire Superintendent Kathy Smith. Tough job. 4,300 children. It's just amazing. As of this morning.
And that's just at the high school, right?
That's right, at the high school, that's right. As of this morning, she had no idea of what the mayor's budget was going to look like and what her number was going to be.
Do we know, Dennis, maybe you'd be able to help me with this, is the mayor planning to tax up to the levy limit? Is he planning to use the funds right up to it? Because that's going to be essential if there's going to be an equity and education lawsuit.
As far as I know, he has to.
Okay.
And you could take that back to, remember when he first was elected, I'm never going to have to use, and then all of a sudden what happened into the second and third year? He has no choice.
Yeah.
You have no choice.
Well, that,
not
well,
to work.
Well, because of a couple of different things, and the four of you can and help fill in the gaps here.
Right.
But, you know, the deficit had grown and grown. Last year it was You know what, 15 million, 16 million?
Or 16 something, yeah.
Somewhere in that ballpark. Yeah. And the conversation was like, what's
exactly,
you know, what's going on here? And the feel was is that it was going to grow even larger this year.
I do want to say, I want to go off the heels of Councilor Nicastro, because our superintendent does an outstanding job. She really, really does. And she's been working feverishly even this past year to get other communities together so that we could now go back and address the issue of what?
Right. It's not one community,
formulation
but,
and how it all works, because that's what's missing. And I was there for this. I understand the foundation level budget. So does and Council Fowler does too, and I'm sure the other councilors do as well. But we need to go back, and we need to get that back in place, because it's the urban cities, again, that are losing out big time.
Right.
Big time. Big time. Look at what we go through in Brockton, and then go over and see what Eastern gets. Okay. Come on. Seriously.
Well, I think
same situation we had 30 years ago, 25 years ago.
Since the ed reform of 93, it is slowly, it's a slow, you had the high tide, the high water mark, and it slowly is, it is dialed back and is eroded over time.
That's right.
We just got a couple of minutes left here. If there's, I'll kind of go right down the line. If there's anything you want to just touch upon while we have you here, we could do that, whether it's a particular issue in the city or just to reach out to your constituents. Dennis?
Well, to be truthful with you, Kev, I think it's been a very interesting interesting year. And as you know, we had two new councilors come on, Councilor Nicastro and Councilor Darrincourt came on and added to the team, which is nice. As I said earlier, unfortunately, we're not in our usual home at City Hall because of the elevator situation. Mm-hmm. But hopefully that's being corrected. There is a contract in place, and they should be starting work soon. But I do want to say that it's been a great group of people to work with, and the people that are there serving the people in this city as councilors are working hard every day and diligently in respect to the constituents and their taxpayers. And makes me pleased as being council president and been there for so many years. That's our job. That's what we're out to do. We don't have our agenda. Our agenda is them. That's the way I always looked at it. And I appreciate you allowing me to be here today, as always.
I like having a nice cross-section of city councilors to come in and a nice rotation. And you know what? Just having you guys come here to Marshfield, it's fantastic. It's awesome.
And I still enjoy serving the people of Ward 3 and the entire city of Brockton as well. It's a great group of people.
Oh, I'm enjoying being on the city council. I'm going into my fifth month, and I've learned so much about Ward 4. Ward 4 is a diverse and interesting place. The people have been terrific. I'm getting a lot of calls now. In the winter, it was snow plowing, and now it's about loud noise at parties and car repair places with too many cars. So keep the calls coming. I'm doing what I can. I'm doing a lot, in fact. I'm making inroads.
Well, I'm going to be self-serving a little bit.
You have 30 seconds.
I have my next ward.
I have to give you a time limit.
Tuesday, May 22nd, along with State Rep Jerry Cassidy. We're going to be at the Brockton Main Library, and one of the issues we're really going to be focusing on is the foreclosures.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We're going to have a segment with John Buckley soon. So
I look forward to hearing on that. And this is, and just to clear it up right now, this city council is not going to be supporting pot shops in downtown Brockton.
Thank you. Okay. When?
On all the issues, we're going to be very cautious, analytical, and we'll work as a team, and we'll take each issue as it comes up, make the best decision we can.
Excellent. I want to thank you all for being here.
Thank you,
Ben. And again, folks, if there's anything in regard to hear segments here, MondayNightTalk@gmail.com. Love to hear your feedback. We could share it on the next shows down the line, whether it's next week or the following week. We're going to step aside, but when we come back, the gloves are coming off with Brian Cook and Steve Gill here on Monday Night Talk, only on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment.
Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
I'm Tiny of Tiny & Sons Glass. Broken windshield? Insurance covers it. Tiny works with all insurance companies.
Hey, Dad, we work with Allstate?
Yes, we do.
How about Amica?
Yes,
how about
well.
Arbella?
Very good.
And Commerce?
Very nice.
Even Geico?
Geico, yes.
Hanover?
Hanover Insurance? Good people.
Liberty Mutual is supposed to be pretty good.
Liberty Mutual? Yes, sir.
MetLife?
MetLife, yes.
Pilgrim?
Pilgrim, I know them.
Hey, Plymouth Rock. How about Plymouth Rock?
Plymouth Rock, excellent.
All right, Progressive, I heard. And Safety?
Safety. Safety is my friend.
And those guys at Tower Group. I thought they were tough, but they've been pretty good lately.
They should buy me lunch.
That's right. And how about USAA, the troops?
USAA is perfect.
We support the troops. We work with them all.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
This is the final segment of this week's Monday Night Talk. And this is a segment, a new segment that we actually did a couple of weeks ago. The name of the segment is called The Gloves Are Off. Now, I think there's some kind of discussion if we're going to keep the name. Have you seen the recent podcast? You've seen the two gentlemen who are the conversationalist in this segment, Brian Cook, Stephen Gill. They are the two who are the ones who, Brian was the one who actually came to me, sent me an email, called me, said, hey, I got an idea for a conversation. Just to be brutally truthful, and look at the issues when it comes to our government, whether it's local government, whether it's state government, federal government, all levels, and we talk about it. We talk about it fairly. And these are two gentlemen who have, they have run for office. They have been out there in the trenches looking for your vote. So they know what they're talking about, and they pay attention to what's going on. Gentlemen, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, don't fight over the microphone, guys. Feel free to talk here.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
We are doing pretty good. And I also want to make sure I throw this out to our listening audience, where this is going to be a reoccurring conversation that we have, that I have with these gentlemen, or these gentlemen have here on Monday Night Talk, mondaynighttalk@gmail.com. I would love your feedback. And it could be something that, as we get feedback, I share, we share, and it could be part of our discussion, depending on the timber of the feedback. So keep that in mind.
Well, as you know, based on the results of the last election, Steve and I don't get invited back very often. So we're very happy that you let us come back and take another shot at it.
So this is a monumentous event for you guys.
Not even a question. we find that most of the elections, even, maybe Stanley Cup and Super Bowls, are decided long before the first coin toss. And Steve and I kind of had that feeling that decisions were made long before we ever even put our name on a ballot.
Interesting. And I believe that Stephen, being somebody who wants to make sure that whatever he's putting out there for information during our conversation, he actually went about, listening to the last segment we did, which is now a podcast. You can find, go to the website 959wat.com and click on Monday Night Talk. You actually fact-checked yourself during one of the previous segment.
I did, Kevin. Thanks for letting me point that out. I was talking about historical references and our second president, John Adams, and I erroneously had alluded to the two-party system being the Federalists, and I thought it was the Whigs at the time, but actually the Whigs came about 20 years later. It was actually the Federalists and the Democratic Republicans was the name of the other party. So I wanted to fact check myself and correct that for the record.
Thank you very much for that fact check, brought to you here by Monday Night Talk. So some of the topics that we are going to discuss in this final segment of Monday Night Talk is we've noticed, over the past number of years, the migration of folks who are elected and serve for us up at the State House, whether they are a state senator, whether they are a state representative, a migration to other jobs where they step away and they become part of the municipal government. Maybe they are a mayor. Maybe they are a town administrator, a town manager. Maybe they are the treasurer of another form of government. You pick your poison. You probably, just by me naming those off, find this interesting. And we bring this up because we are seeing the migration of two representatives right now, where you have Jim Cantwell, who actually recently announced and stepped away as the representative for the 4th Plymouth District, which is Marshfield, Scituate. Also, Tom Coulter being named the Kingston Town Administrator as he's getting ready. He'll wrap up once the process, I believe, once it's time, and he'll probably in the next couple of weeks this will happen, that he'll have a kind of a, hey, I'm saying goodbye and vacating the seat, so to speak. Gentlemen, do you want to kind of speak to this?
Well, one of the interesting parts of politics, obviously, is sort of the what's behind the curtain. And you could look at this and say that somebody has developed a certain expertise and wants to use it. But there's another story going on. I just read an article about the city of Providence is declaring bankruptcy because of the heavy level of pensions of their municipal workers. And one of the reasons for a lot of these game of musical chairs with our elected officials is you look at a seat like the state rep seat or the state senate seat, and those are, you know, in my opinion anyway, very honorable ways to serve your community. But they pay half of what being a town administrator pays. So you wonder, when a Tom Coulter makes that move, was it for the town of Kingston or was it for the pension? When Bob Hedlund decided to leave the Senate seat to become the mayor of a town he didn't grow up in and didn't live in, was it for the $140,000 salary versus the $70,000 salary and the eventual pension kick? Because you get paid for the last, I believe, 2 years of whatever office you held. And what the good folks of the South Shore don't realize is that if you spend one term in the Senate or one term in a mayor's seat or one term in any municipal seat, you get a pension for life. Hmm. Think of the health care benefits and the money being spent on all the people who ran for office, held office, and now are working on their handicap. Well, I meant golf.
Oh, okay. Steve?
Yeah, and given that this show is all about, you know, it was all Brian's brainchild here, I just want to set the dynamic of what we have here. Brian, in my mind, is like Batman, and I'm like Robin to his sidekick here, so I can throw in some comments.
You could be Green Lantern or someone else like that. You don't have to take on that moniker.
Well, you know, I think if we're talking about changing the name of the show, it could be the dynamic duo at some point. But anyway, yeah, and Brian's right. He makes a point here, you know, people may not realize. There are multiple pension systems in the state, and once you max out on your state pension, you know, it doesn't do you any good to continue on in the seat because it's incrementally increases by pennies how much you get paid down the line. So once you max out on your chart, maybe you transition over to a town job, you're in a whole other pension program, and now you're in the municipal pension, and you can actually double dip and collect two pensions. Now, the federal government used to do this a lot. They would have military folks go on active duty after 20 years, you retire, you're 40 years old, you're getting a full military pension. Used to be the best. They just turned it over to Wall Street, though, a year ago, so it's no longer exists. But then you could go from there into a civilian civil service job with the federal government and double dip and collect two pensions. Well, the feds figured this out, that this was, you know, going to be a massive strain. Not that we already have enough of a massive strain on our federal debt and all that stuff, but they make folks now, after a certain date, and this has been in effect for, I don't know, 15, 20 years now, you have to choose one or the other, and you don't end up getting both. And there's a lot more intricacies to it than that. But we don't have that in Massachusetts. You can still double dip away and get two pensions. And, you know, it really stinks for the taxpayer. Now, if these guys are really doing this because they're experts and they want to do a good job, and I point out, for example, here in Marshfield, Mike Maresco worked for the Secretary of State for, I guess, 20 years and has retired now. And then he became the town administrator. So now he's working on his second municipal pension. I've got nothing against Mike Maresco. I think he's a great guy. I think he does a good job. I was at town meeting just this past week, and he did a fine job, I thought. I was particularly watching him and how he was handling everything. I thought he did a fine job. But, you know, let's pass a statute that says no more double dipping, no more, you know, giving one person two pensions on the taxpayer's dime. You know, let's follow the federal model. How about we do that?
I want to throw something out. I know, Brian, you want to jump in here. And again, I feel my role is to play devil's advocate. You guys are the ones who kind of take a look at it and go, could it be this? Could it be that? And again, we're just putting it, this is a conversation, so to speak. This isn't to wag the finger at any particular person. My thought, and I kind of think to part one of our conversations that we're going to have this half hour, looking at the traffic and having to go into Boston every day. Is it possible that these individuals see it as a bit more of a benefit to work locally than have to try to make it into Boston, run into Boston, and find parking? Could it be something like that? Could it be like what Steve said? Could it be that the desire to work locally and take the knowledge that they have gathered up on the state level and be able to utilize that locally? Could it be that? Brian, you wanted to say something.
Well, I was just going to say, wouldn't it be wonderful if that were the case? And as this radio station knows, through Bill Wilhelm, my background was largely in sports. And the interesting part about a sports contract is you're technically supposed to get paid for what you accomplish. You win a championship, you get a raise. You hit 50 home runs, you get a raise. So if our elected officials actually fixed the hideous commute we have on the South Shore, then they should get reelected. Then they should get a raise. But if we continue to have the same problems that we had in 1959 when they ended the commuter rail on the South Shore, holding us hostage to one two-lane road, or even now, every day we get up and you find yourself wondering, where am I going today? Because the road keeps changing. We have three lanes in some places and four lanes in others. And now that they've taken all the trees down, can they leave those roads for us? And who's supposed to answer those questions for us? Because we're not getting it from our elected officials.
Excellent segue, because that was what I wanted to do, is just kind of move in that direction, so to speak. In regards to Route 3, Stephen, as we were getting ready to come on here during the break, had mentioned, he's like, my goodness, you know, it's the traffic is crazy. If you want to pick up where I'm leaving off here, Steve, please do so.
Yeah, and as I said right before we went on the air, you know, my 50th birthday just happened. And looking back for my entire life, even as a child through adulthood, how many countless hours over that time period have we spent coming down Route 3, coming back from Boston, only to have to hit the horrific merge at the Derby Street lane drop. And we all sit there. You know, you fight the traffic getting out of Boston. You come down to the Braintree split. It's a nightmare. You make it through that nightmare, and you're coming down, and now you're at the Derby Street drop. I mean, it's ridiculous.
No, you're right. I mean, and if we think about this on a political level, sure, we care about whether or not the Korean Peninsula gets rid of its nuclear weapons, or we care about whether Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, and so many other issues that are out there. But to be honest, most of us spend every day dealing and thinking about that commute and wishing that would change, because that's going to impact our lives a whole lot more than those other worldly issues.
So you're thinking, so we're looking at Route 3, especially from Derby Street down, should there be a conversation about maybe a major construction project to make it from, you know, instead of having it where it bottlenecks,
yep,
around Derby Street, where it's a straight shot, three lanes?
Well, when I was a kid, I like to tell the story that my grandparents owned the Derby Street property that they bought for $300 and sold for $600 because the highway was never going to come down to Hingham. The road literally stopped. So they build Route 3 that connects us to the Cape, and the traffic used to build up in Weymouth. And then 10 years later, it built up in Hingham. Now the traffic runs all the way down to exit 10 at night and doesn't really break free until you get into Plymouth. Another lane would add 30% capacity to that road.
They've got us driving in the breakdown lane anyway,
right,
in, during the morning hours that they have posted and during the evening hours coming back. So there's a need for a three-lane road. But even when you have the breakdown lane open for traffic, it's still no fun, you know?
But here's the thing, though, and I remember just a few short years ago, there was this conversation about having a toll road on Route 3, and a lot of people got up in arms. And I only say this because the one thing that's going to be said, if you were to put such a proposal forward, whether it's the governor who proposes it instead of chasing after the South Coast Rail Project, if Route 3 and that corridor from Exit 15 down to the Cape, or even down to Exit 4, I mean, or again, anything would be better. The one thing that's going to be said is, how will we pay for this?
Well, here's a better idea. Here's a better idea. Forget State Route 3 that has to be paid for by the state. Let's make it a federal one. Why do you think when you go into Boston, you get north of Boston, they have these beautiful 5-6-lane roads going up? That's a federal roadway. It's 93/95,
explain,
right?
Steve, to the folks that don't understand why it's a federal road. What was the highway system created for in 1950?
There you go.
Oh, I can tell you. Yeah, you really want that history lesson?
Yeah.
All right. So
we like history.
Our interstate.
just before you get started,
right?
Just make sure that you don't have to
check
yourself next time.
Okay. Ooh. The interstate. I know this one. It's called the Interstate Highway System. It used to be called the Eisenhower Interstate Highway System. And what happened was, after we came back from World War II and we had saw what Hitler and the Nazis had done in Germany with the Autobahn, they had invented the modern concept of the highway, traveling at high speeds with minimum exits that go off in, you know, these circles, and traffic actually flows better. I mean, you know, for all the horrific things the Germans did in World War II, they actually are brilliant engineers and designers, and they built the Autobahn. And when we went over there and we were moving our troops, and after we occupied Germany, we saw how wonderful it was. And Eisenhower said, we got to do this in the U.S. Because earlier, after World War I, they had sent an expedition of Army troops from the D.C. Virginia area all the way across to California, and it took them 3 months because it was all hodgepodge roads, dirt roads, bogged down. It was a nightmare. And so they had a massive spending bill, and they created the Interstate Highway System, called the Eisenhower Interstate Highway mm-hmm. System. Really, it was to facilitate the movement of troops throughout our country.
Right, just for our military.
Right. In case we had a war on our shores, we could move our troops around the country more easily.
Holy flaming asphalt, Robin. That was a brilliant historical analysis of the issue, and it's really appreciated. Because now I can drive the Batmobile at a much greater speed on the Autobahn.
That's fantastic. That
you better
was
not.
Great.
You better not, Batman. Holy ticket from the state police, Batman.
Well, and that's similar. My understanding is the internet was something similar. No, or am
yes.
I wrong?
No, the internet was, and we know that Al Gore created it. The internet was designed as a way of creating communication in the possibility of a nuclear holocaust. And after the Army spent a whole lot of time developing it, they said, "Nope, we're going to give up." And then some very smart capitalists came along and said, "We can make this work," and obviously it has.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, except for the dot-com boom. Yeah, I mean,
right.
Some would definitely question that. Again, you are listening to Monday Night Talk, and this is a new segment called The Gloves Are Off with Brian Cook and Stephen Gill. And we usually pick the conversations, and it's an open conversation. It's not necessarily a finger-pointing. All right, maybe it is sometimes. But the idea is just to kind of have the conversation and maybe stimulate further conversation with our audience members. MondayNightTalk@gmail.com. Love to hear your feedback on the particular segment. Hey, maybe you're somebody that we talked about. Maybe, you know, in the past couple of segments. Feel free, you know, to weigh in, and it could be fodder for the next segment that we start off our conversations with. I want to kind of close out the segment and the show. Is there one thing you want to say before?
Well,
we
I actually
that?
Did, because Steve just gave a very nice historical perspective, and I wanted to give one as well. When you're on the South Shore, and Kevin had raised the issue of how do we pay for this if we wanted to improve our highway. When you're on the South Shore, I want you to take your family on a Sunday and take a ride down and view the $458 million tunnel that was built in Hingham. Oh, actually, you can't see it. so maybe you shouldn't go there. But Hingham decided to basically hold the train hostage by saying, we don't want a train running through our town. So they spent almost $500 million so that you wouldn't see it, whereas it seems fine running through Cohasset and other places. So when we think about our highway system, it would be tragic to see all the trees cut down, but if you could get from Braintree to Duxbury as we can at midnight in 12 minutes, it would be lovely if we could do that at 9 o'clock in the morning as well.
Excellent point. Definitely an excellent point. I want to talk a little bit about, it is election season, especially on the state level, and we do have a couple of federal, look at the U.S. Senate race, congressional races. But there was some news over the past week in regards to the governor's race. Governor, at one point in time, had three Democrats running against him. One of them being Seti Warren, former mayor of Newton. Seti sadly dropped out because he could barely, I mean, and he's been in the race, I want to say, well over a year, but hasn't gained any traction as far as fundraising. But when you look at the coffers of the governor, governor has in excess of $7 million. Gentlemen?
Well, you just hit on probably the biggest issue in American politics. It's no longer the man or woman who can do the best job. It's the one who can raise the most money.
And it's the party darling, because those are the ones who are going to get the funds funneled to them through their party system.
And, I mean, we just saw in Utah that Mitt Romney did not get the nomination from the party, yet everyone knows he's going to win that race. In Massachusetts, it's a little different in that the party makes a determination, as I said, before the coin toss as to what the score of the game is going to be. And as Steve points out, they then funnel money, or they give people instruction, or they introduce them to the party faithful who write those checks. It would be wonderful if we could go to, whether it was Plato or I can't remember, but someone said, find the smartest person in our society and elevate them to the highest office for the benefit of all. We don't necessarily do that. It's the one with the biggest bank account.
Biggest bank account, and sometimes it is kind of a popularity contest. And again, this is no knock on our current governor, but, you know, I've heard it touted over and over and over that he's got the highest approval rating.
Well, Steve, you know, you used the term earlier when he was fact-checking about a Democratic Republican. I don't think there's anyone that really believes that Mr. Baker is a Republican. You can't win in Massachusetts if you are pro-life. You can't win if you take a certain position on taxes, if you take a certain position on unions. There are certain places where you can and can't go. And if you look at what had been the Republican Party and what Charlie Baker is, he's really a Democrat with an R next to his name. And that's maybe not a bad thing. But what I liked most about the Seti Warren situation, it would be nice if it wasn't just money that determined whether Seti Warren could be the next governor of Massachusetts. It should be the people deciding who the most accomplished, most talented, and most beneficial for us would be.
The problem is the citizenry doesn't really have time to follow this stuff because we're sitting behind the wheel of our car, stuck in traffic on Route 3 for 4 hours a day, two in and two out.
However, because of the wonderful addition of talk radio, we get to learn about life and these issues. And, you know, on the 2 or 3 hour ride you have from here to Braintree, you can get through most of WATD's morning.
But you'll be home before you hear this segment.
No, but the great thing is depending on what you have for a vehicle, if you have a vehicle, you can always be able to hear this podcast.
My Republican and independent friend sitting next to me does drive a Prius. I just wanted that known to those that care about the environment that Steve Gill is out there making sure that he is not adding to his carbon footprint.
Listen, I wouldn't say I'm a hero, because the only reason why I drive a Prius is because I don't want to pay for gas. You know what I mean? It's an economic decision. It has nothing to do with the environment. You know, mm-hmm. It's all about with high gas prices, using less gas as possible so I can try to keep a couple of more dollars in my pocket.
I do have to make the comment because it is important to me, and I do appreciate sitting next to Steve, and that of the people that have run for office on the South Shore, he's one of the few who actually did serve his country as a veteran, and that matters. I had this conversation yesterday that it saddens me that our police and our fire and our teachers can't live in the towns that they work in. Housing is another major issue on the South Shore. My parents' house was $10,000 when they bought it. They made about $5,000 a year. Now the average salary on the South Shore is about $45,000 to $50,000, and the average house is $400,000 to $500,000. We're becoming a community that kids who grow up here can't stay in, and they certainly can't get out of town because they'll get stuck on Route 3.
Well, it could be worse. You could actually try to live in Boston if you can find something that's affordable to live in the city.
And have no parking space either.
I'm trying to remember. Recently, a parking space was sold on Beacon Hill. I want to say close to $1 million for a parking space.
Well, there was a city councilor. I can't remember her name. She was proposing
Diane Modica.
There'll be no free parking. And even if you're a resident, you have to pay to park in front of your own house.
Very, very interesting. And I want to say one thing is, as you mentioned about being a hero at driving a Prius. Well,
that was
a
quote, air quotes hero.
No, I know it was air quotes, but where you've already kind of put yourself in the sidekick mode, where you, I don't know if a sidekick can be seen as a hero.
Well, Kevin actually wanted you to name a dealership where you bought your car so that we could get them as a sponsor for the segment, I think, when he was talking about a hero.
Oh. I don't think I can mention it, can I?
No.
It was a Toyota dealer, obviously.
All right, there you go. Gentlemen, we're winding down this segment. Anything that you want to touch upon before we say goodbye to the folks who are tuned into us right now?
Well, you know, the interesting part of what's going on now in Washington, whether you love him or hate him, people are talking about politics. And maybe having our commander-in-chief sending out tweets while he's doing his morning business isn't what we consider presidential. But people are discussing politics, and they're discussing, what do I want in that job and in that seat and in running our country? It would be great if we do that on the state level, the local level, and on every level, because we are casting a vote, and it still is, despite all of its warts and pimples, it still is the greatest freedom we have and the greatest power we have in our society.
Steve?
Yeah, and I would go so further as to say that the third branch of government that we always forget about, the judiciary,
yep.
Your vote really, really matters when you compare it to just the regular election cycle for the executive and the legislative branch folks, is when you sit as a member of a jury and vote with your peers on the real life of someone sitting in front of you, your fellow citizen, and deciding what the rest of that person's life is going to look like. So I kind of hold the third branch, not because I'm a lawyer, but I kind of hold the third branch of government in a more higher esteem when it comes to your individual vote having a direct impact in your community.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for participating in yet another fantastic segment here on Monday Night Talk. I'm kind of thinking that we might want to maybe get some cameras in on this, and maybe this could be something that could be shared with another media outlet. I have a couple in mind, so keep that as something you'll consider for future segments. Again, name of the segment called "The Gloves Are Off" with Brian Cook and Steve Gill. Steve or Steven?
Either. If you call me Steven, I think I'm in trouble, because that's when my mother would use my full name, and when I knew I was in trouble.
Your middle name is
Dennis.
Steven Dennis. So remember that. When you get mad at him, we'll call him Steven
Well,
Dennis.
With nine kids in the family, I think he'd be happy with his mother. Well, even got his name right
my
on
mother,
occasion.
My mother knew the name. My father would say, Chris, Brad, Steven, whoever you are, get out of here.
All right. And so with that, and again, I've done it a couple of times during this segment. Definitely would love your feedback. MondayNightTalk@gmail.com for this segment, as it could be part of a conversation that we have in future segments. So that's all the time that we have here on Monday Night Talk as we close out this segment. with Brian and Stephen. You have been listening to Monday Night Talk. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great evening.
The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.